Hello, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, where we explore and analyze who and what have been making news at Iowa's state capitol, including the governor, lawmakers, and legislation that's in the works or could be in the works, and what it means for all of us. I'm Dennis Hart, and I'm joined, as always, by Laura Bellin of the must-read political blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, here we are again on Capital Week, and again, it is good to be with you.
Oh, nice to be here, Dennis.
Do we have a few things to talk about again today? We say that all the time, but wow, talk about breaking news. Week two of the legislature's overtime session came and went last week. Lawmakers still not getting their per diems, still not being able to reach agreement on a budget or taxes, but we have late breaking news about what's been going on. So what's happened?
It seems like just within the last hour or so, the Senate Ways and Means Committee chair, that's the tax writing committee, has introduced a bill that he says is a compromise among the Senate Republicans, House Republicans, and the governor's office. And it seems like the Senate Republicans mostly got what they want. I have not had a chance to review the bill text, but it looks like the big picture is that the governor is going to get the shift from mental health funding from property taxes to state funding. It also appears that the Senate Republicans are going to get what they want in terms of phasing out the inheritance tax and in eliminating what were called triggers that prevented some income tax cuts from going into effect if revenue didn't hit a certain point. It sounds like the child tax credit will be increased. And for local governments, they're going to lose what's called the backfill, which is a certain amount of state funding that they've been receiving since 2013 to compensate for commercial property tax revenues that they lost. So I'm trying to figure out whether House Republicans got anything out of this deal. It sounds like on most of the big picture items, the Senate Republicans got the better part of it.
Now, the House and Senate Republicans were far apart. That would be Laura Bellin's dog right there wanting to join us. The House and Senate Republicans were far apart last week on much of this. Why do you think, if this all is true, and it is all true, obviously, why do you think the House Republicans are, I don't know if they're caving, but why do you think they're going toward the middle on this one?
Well, I always felt that it was more likely that the House Republicans would move because the governor seemed to be aligned with the Senate Republicans. But it could also be that there are provisions tucked away in this bill that the House is getting. One thing that was announced last week that the Senate did agree to is making permanent the reimbursement, the full reimbursement for telehealth services for mental health. That was something that the Iowa House has voted for two or three times this year. I think they also voted for it last year. The Senate Republicans had balked at that. The insurance companies don't want that. So it sounds like that is also part of this tax deal that was announced last week. The House Republicans had wanted some broader based income tax. I don't know if the right way to say it is a refund or a credit, but there is a taxpayer fund that they wanted a certain amount refunded. And I'm not sure, I can't tell whether they got that out of this deal. So it seems like it could be that, I would guess that they must have gotten something, but maybe the governor's office was just able to persuade them that. And it's also possible that the House Republicans gave up some ground on the tax bill and maybe got more of what they wanted on the budget. I don't see any indication that they have agreement on all of the spending bills yet.
So is there any indication from what you've seen so far that this could mean the legislature would wrap up this week?
I think it's possible. I mean, if this is really a deal, now, as I said, I don't know whether they have agreement on the spending, but it's only Monday. So if they introduce this bill, if they get it through the Senate tomorrow or Wednesday and get it through the House on Thursday, that the taxes are a big part of what they still need to wrap up this year. So the budget bill, I just don't know how things are going on the budget negotiations, but it seems plausible. I mean, on the other hand, the Senate was just debating the big policing bill, which they're calling the Back the Blue bill today. And instead of accepting the House amended version, they amended it again and sent it back to the House. So now that's yet another bill that the House needs to debate again. It'll probably be a long debate with a number of amendments. So it's hard to tell. And again, they still haven't picked up that abortion constitutional amendment. So there are quite a few things that they've left unfinished. But I think that given that we're only Monday, I think that they could definitely get out of here this week if they have an agreement on the budget.
Well, let's see. We also need the breaking news sounder. Oh, that's right. We don't have one. We need some sort of breaking news sounder right now. The Senate on Monday afternoon has passed an amended Back the Blue bill the Democrats say is going to worsen racial disparity. So let's unpack this one. This again happened Monday afternoon.
Yes. Yeah, so this is a bill. Different versions of this legislation have been floating around this year, and this bill combines pieces of several of them. So one part of it is a qualified immunity, writing that into Iowa code. Qualified immunity is a judicial concept that courts came up with decades ago that essentially says it's not that if a police officer violates your constitutional rights, that the officer can't be sued because if that happened in the process of performing their official duties. It doesn't only apply to police, but that's the, law enforcement is the main area where qualified immunity comes into play. And so the Iowa Supreme Court had a ruling on this in 2018 that was somewhat favorable to plaintiffs who might sue police officers who violate their rights. And so this legislation sets things back and would create a standard in Iowa code that's more favorable to the police. So that's one part of it. Another large part of it would increase the penalties for a number of crimes related to protesting. So for instance, damaging public property during a protest, any damage to public property, which currently is a simple misdemeanor, would become a felony offense. There are other things related to eluding that's the legal term is eluding. It's resisting arrest that they've made that definition more broad. Things that are clearly designed to target people who were involved in Black Lives Matter protests against systemic racism and police misconduct. So that's another big part of this bill. But several of the Democrats in the Iowa Senate had voted for an earlier version. They'd voted for the qualified immunity legislation, but they just couldn't accept today what was some of the things that the Republicans tacked on. And one of the points of contention this afternoon during the debate was that a new Senate Republican amendment says that if you refuse to pull over for an unmarked police car, that would be considered eluding arrest. And last year, they already increased the penalties for eluding. So that's deeply concerning. And then several of the senators, including Kevin Kinney, who is recently retired from the Johnson County Sheriff's Office, but he was deputy sheriff for many years. And he said he wouldn't even advise his daughters to pull over for an unmarked vehicle. I mean, it's kind of a basic safety measure. There have been a lot of cases where predators impersonated law enforcement. So to make it suddenly a crime to not pull over for an unmarked vehicle was pretty troubling to the Democrats. And also just several other parts of the bill where they felt that this was something, it's the opposite of the bipartisan criminal justice reform spirit from last June. And it takes the state in a direction of penalizing protest rather than trying to work on bringing people together on justice reform.
Yeah, we've talked about this in previous broadcasts. It seems as if the legislature has taken the message from the Black Lives Matter protests last summer to indicate they should protect police more than the protesters.
Yes, I mean, that is definitely the takeaway that, and particularly not even just protecting the police, but also protecting property. I mean, one of the big instigator for this increased penalties for damage to public property is that last summer, the Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City, parts of it were spray painted. The statue of Neil Kinnick was spray painted and defaced. And, you know, I don't think anybody in the legislature supports defacing public property, but the way the bill is worded, it's very broad. And so, I mean, you could be one of the Democratic legislators in the House raised this point during the debate. I mean, you could be trampling on a flower bed during a protest in a park and suddenly you're charged with a felony for damaging state property. I mean, it's not likely that that would happen, but that is theoretically possible given the wording in this bill. And so it's troubling because we saw from the analysis that whenever there's a bill related to creating a new crime, a new offense, or increasing the penalties for an offense, they have to they have to have a nonpartisan analysis on what would be the minority impact. That's what it's called, the minority impact statement. And the minority impact statement on this bill, when it went through the House, was that most of these offenses related to protesting are disproportionately used against people of color, particularly Black Iowans. And so it would probably end up increasing the disparities in the justice system to have all of these protest-related crimes, failing to disperse or being part of a riot. And a riot, by the way, under Iowa law is like three or more people in certain types of gatherings. So it goes pretty far beyond what many of us would consider a riot. And so Kevin Kinney, this retired deputy sheriff from Johnson County, he said, you know, this could ruin young people's lives. I mean, we have to think really carefully about policing and not just be quick to charge people with felonies.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in the court of public opinion. Let's go from protesting and police to voting. A key Republican lawmaker denied statements by the head of the Heritage Action for America group, and that's a conservative lobbying group, about their role in the approval of voting restrictions this year in Iowa. Jessica Anderson said in a leaked video that her organization had drafted parts of that bill limiting voting and helped pass it. Now, Representative Bobby Kaufman, one of the authors, said it was a bold-faced lie. So let's unpack all of this. What do we make of this?
Well, if you remember, in March, we talked at length about this election bill that the Republicans passed.
Oh, yes.
It limits voting in many ways. It limits early voting. Mm. It shortens the hours for Election Day voting. It shortens the time for ballots to arrive. And it also makes people move more quickly to inactive status if they miss even one general election. So this had a lot of pieces to it. And Jessica Anderson, the head of this dark money group, Heritage Action, she was specifically taking credit for three parts of it. One is the more quickly moving people to inactive status. And there were a couple of other things related to the voter rolls. But she wasn't taking credit for some of the most impactful parts of the bill, like shortening the early voting window, restricting who can hand deliver ballots for people, and so on. So I immediately reached out to Bobby Kaufman, who is the House floor manager, and Robbie Smith, who is the Senate floor manager and the main authors of the bill. I did not hear back from Senator Smith. He did end up releasing a statement to the Des Moines Register the following afternoon, and he also denied that Heritage Action played any role in this drafting this bill. But Bobby Kaufman was adamant that they had no role. They didn't. He said, I got no phone calls, no texts, no emails. I didn't communicate with anyone. And I asked, well, is it possible that you heard from people who were representing Heritage Action unbeknownst to you? And he said, nobody suggested any of that language. That was language that he worked out with Senator Smith, according to Representative Kaufman. So it is possible that the Heritage Action executive director was exaggerating a bit to impress her own donors about the role they played in Iowa. It does seem like independent reporting suggests that Heritage Action they were much more involved in the bill, the election bill that passed in Georgia, which was a few weeks later than the Iowa bill. So it could be that they've been more involved in other states than in Iowa. But right now, all we know is that the House and Senate Republicans are denying that any of this happened. And the State Ethics and Campaign Disclosure Board is going to be investigating this from the perspective of did Heritage Action lobby the governor's office? Because they weren't registered. They didn't register as lobbyists, and they didn't say that they were trying to influence any bill. So it's possible that if they were involved in trying to influence this bill, they may have violated Iowa lobbying and ethics rules. So we'll have to see what that investigation turns up.
Speaking about the state representative, I'm talking about Bobby Kaufman. He made the lead story or the lead line in a front page New York Times story last week, headlined GOP efforts to limit vote fueled by lies. And then the lead sentence goes, when State Representative Bobby Kaufman of Iowa spoke in February in support of a restrictive voting bill he was sponsoring, he made what might once have been a startling acknowledgement. He could not point to any problems with November's election that demonstrated a need for new rules. And I think this, as the Times article goes on to point out, and as we have said numerous times in the last 16 or 17 weeks, Republicans across the country, including in Iowa, have attempted to restrict voting in a number of battleground states and key states, not on the basis of evidence that there was any problem with the election, but that the election went the wrong way. Though in Iowa, for them, it went the right way. Former President Trump won. This is going on across the country.
Yes. And several Iowa Republicans after the election said, well, there may have been problems in other states, but there weren't any problems here. We had a great election and we didn't have any fraud. And then it shifted to, well, we didn't have any problems with our election, but people still have questions and they lack confidence in the system. And so that's what Bobby Coffin was getting at, is that even though we didn't have any fraud here, we could still do things to supposedly increase election integrity. Now, the provisions of this bill, I mean, shortening the early voting window, making it more difficult to return your ballot, I mean, none of those things increase integrity. In fact, some of the county auditors are concerned that having to everything compressed into a shorter window will increase the chance of mistakes being made. They may have to hire more temporary employees to manage their workflow, and those inexperienced people could make mistakes. So it's really the lawsuit that was filed shortly after Governor Reynolds signed that law. One of the points it makes is that there really isn't any legitimate government interest cited for any of these new voting restrictions. So it will have to see where that goes. I mean, as for whether outside groups influence this legislation, I mean, Republicans in many states are moving in the same direction to try to restrict voting. And, you know, it could, who had the idea first? I mean, maybe they were all converging on the same set of restrictions that seem targeted at Democratic leaning groups. I mean, we saw a partisan shift in 2020 where Democratic voters were much more likely to cast early ballots. And so it's not a coincidence that in a lot of these states, the Republicans are attacking early voting. In fact, they're even attacking it in Florida, where traditionally Republicans have had an advantage in early voting.
Right. And of course, in Florida, where the election went very well, they've also signed a restrictive voting bill. All of this being designed, as we've talked about, in Republicans coming out of their mouths in an effort to restore confidence in the system. But the confidence in the system has been eroded by President Trump's lies about the election. Let's be honest about that.
Yes. And the latest polling that was released on Sunday by CBS and YouGov, that was fairly disturbing because this was a national poll. 67% of Republicans surveyed said they don't believe Joe Biden is the legitimate winner of the 2020 election. And I right. think that within Congress or the people, the actual governors, I mean, I think few of the Republicans in senior positions believe in Trump's lies about the election. But the problem is, if Republicans have sold that to a large share of the electorate, it is very damaging to democracy because they're setting up a situation where a lot of people just don't believe an election is legitimate unless their candidate wins.
Right. And if people are, if first-time listeners are somewhat surprised by our use of the word lies, this is not a partisan word we're using. There is no credible evidence that any election chicanery took place in the United States. It has been adjudicated more than 60 times in many courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court. And yet former President Trump continues to this very day alleging the election was stolen.
Right. And I mean, Republicans, including the Secretary of State of Georgia, the Maricopa County Recorder, that's a Republican in the Phoenix area of Arizona. I mean, many Republicans have also said that the president is lying about the claims about the election. So it's just there are no facts to substantiate it.
No, that's right. It is about 18 minutes after the hour, and we are zooming our way literally through this edition of Capital Week. I'm Dennis Hart, and joining me is Laura Bellin, as always. We're talking about what happened under the Gold Dome last week. And one of the things that happened, Governor Reynolds, who often makes news, made a lot of it involving the coronavirus. She said, in her words, there is no reason for us to continue to fear COVID-19 any longer. And in the wake of new CDC guidance late last week, the State Department of Public Health urged schools and child care providers to abandon mandatory face coverings and quarantines for children exposed to the virus. So it looks as if it's all coming off, masks included, in Iowa. The governor essentially is saying, hey, we don't have to do anything anymore. It's fine.
It's there are a lot of mixed messages. I mean, it's interesting. And some school districts, including the largest school district in Des Moines, they have said they are going to continue their mask mandate through the end of this school year. The Waukee School District in the suburbs is also doing that. But many of smaller school districts, especially in Iowa, have rescinded over the weekend or today. They've rescinded their mask mandates. And it was a little bit of moving the goalposts because the Centers for Disease Control said last Thursday that if you're fully vaccinated, you can stop wearing a mask for most activities outdoors and indoors. They said if you're fully vaccinated, and they specifically said that schools should continue to require universal and correct usage of masks. And they even put out another statement over the weekend saying that they recommend that schools continue their COVID-19 mitigation. Of course, the vast majority of children in schools are not fully vaccinated. It's only last week that children under the age of 16 were even able to get one shot. So kids 12 to 15, some of them maybe now have one shot. None of them are fully vaccinated. Some children, 16, 17, or 18-year-old, might be fully vaccinated. But those younger than that, and certainly any children young enough to be in daycare, are not going to be vaccinated. And so the CDC guidance really had nothing to do with kids in schools or kids in daycare. And yet the Iowa Department of Public Health said, well, we think it's time for you to make masks optional. So a lot of people were really upset about that last week. And of course, then on the other side, there were people who were cheering that because they never liked the mask mandates to begin with.
Sure. And what this has done is created an immense amount of confusion across the country. People are, as stores pull off their mask requirements, major stores, Walmart, Target, et cetera, they're relying on the honor system. Nobody's asking, have you been vaccinated? So now we have a situation where people are going into the stores and we have no idea whether they have been vaccinated. The truth is, those of us who have been, we're probably not at risk, but they're putting other people at risk who might not be vaccinated, those who have not been vaccinated.
Yes, and there are still people who are fully vaccinated. They might be immunocompromised. They might live with someone who's immunocompromised, being treated for cancer, or some. I actually know someone who has had kidney transplants, and even though he's fully vaccinated, they did tests, and he doesn't show any antibodies, and it's probably related to the anti-rejection meds that he's taken following his kidney transplants. At least that's what his doctors are telling him. So there's an example of someone who's vaccinated, but he's going to need to continue to wear masks for the foreseeable future. And a lot of people are in that boat.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I took off my mask just before you and I got together tonight. Just kidding, Laura. I wasn't wearing a mask. The governor announced last week that the state of Iowa, still coronavirus, the governor, is cutting federal jobless benefits, insurance benefits, jobless insurance benefits that were created at the start of the coronavirus pandemic. The governor says, believes bluntly, $300 a week is keeping people from applying for work. Let's unpack that.
Yes, this is part of a national trend. I think we're up to 16 Republican governors now who have said that they're going to reject the federal portion of the unemployment benefits. So last year, in the early weeks of the pandemic, Congress passed the CARES Act, and that included a lot of extended unemployment support for people, including an extra $600 a week for 4 months. And many of the Republicans, including Iowa's Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst, voted against those extra $600 a week payments, but they did pass and they expired at the end of July last year. Then in one of the later bills, they were revived, but as $300 a week payments. So we now have tens of thousands of Iowans and millions of people across the country are on unemployment and receiving an extra $300 a week from the federal government. And that in Iowa and in 15 other states, that is going to end very soon. Then there are some other pandemic-related federal unemployment programs that are targeted for certain types of people who don't qualify for state unemployment benefits for one reason or another, but they do qualify for these federal programs, and Iowa is going to end its participation in those as well. So we are probably going to have about at least 30,000 Iowans who are going to lose their entire unemployment benefit, and then another tens of thousands of Iowans who will continue to receive state unemployment benefits, but will lose the extra $300 a week. And that's a pretty significant chunk of change. They estimate it fluctuates from week to week with the unemployment claims, but it seems to be about a little more than $30 million a week total that's going to Iowans through these federal programs. And Iowa is going to pull out of those effective June 12th. So, you know, the governor says that she thinks that that's going to inspire some people to go out and find a job, whereas other people, some economists say that there are other barriers like lack of childcare or lack of physical ability to do the jobs available in your area, that there could be other reasons people aren't taking the jobs available. And so cutting these unemployment benefits is not necessarily going to result in people going back to work immediately. It might just mean that it's harder for them to pay their bills.
We have about 5 minutes left for this edition of Capital Week. Governor also signed a bill that does away with the statute of limitations to bring criminal charges for several sexual abuse-related crimes committed against minors. Let's talk about that.
This is something that's been proposed year after year, and finally it happened. I spoke over the weekend with State Senator Janet Peterson of Des Moines, who's been the kind of the lead sponsor on a lot of these bills, and they just have not gotten traction for a long time, but they finally did. So what the Democrats were hoping for was a bill that would extend the both the criminal and the civil statute of limitations. And what they got instead was a bill that lifted the criminal statute of limitations but didn't change the civil statute. So Iowa is still much more restrictive than most other states in terms of when a victim of childhood sexual abuse can file a civil lawsuit against the perpetrator. But at least now the criminal charges can be brought much later than under the previous law. There are still a few loopholes that some of the legislators weren't happy about that apply to school staff, coaches. But for the most part, this should make it easier to prosecute some of these cases. The lack of a change in the civil liability, the civil statute of limitations, that's something that probably is going to come back in future legislative sessions. Because what they found, Senator Peterson told me, is that in some states where people, much older people in their 40s and 50s, are bringing civil suits against their abusers, they're finding that many of these abusers continued over the decades to go on and abuse more children. And so sometimes then they're finding more recent crimes by the same people are being uncovered after the civil lawsuits are filed. And so that is allowing criminal cases by other involving other victims to be filed. So we'll see what happens. But for now, I mean, it's a win. It's certainly a step in the right direction for Iowa. They passed these bills, passed almost unanimously, and the governor was happy to sign it. So we'll see what happens in the future on the civil liability.
Former Republican Iowa Congressman Jim Leach, widely admired around the state, made some news last week. Let's talk about that.
Yes. Well, there is a new effort that it's called a Call for American Renewal. This is about 150 or so prominent former Republicans, including 27 former members of Congress. Jim Leach is one, four former governors, numerous former ambassadors, cabinet secretaries, who are taking a stand against what they call political extremism and basically Trumpism, although their manifesto didn't name Trump. But they are threatening to form a third party if they don't get the Republican Party to change their ways, in effect. And so the only Iowa name I spotted on this list was Jim Leach. And if you're old enough to remember Jim Leach, it probably wouldn't surprise you because he was one of those old-fashioned moderate Republicans, or they used to be called Rockefeller Republicans, who don't really exist in the Republican Party anymore.
Right. Rockefeller Republicans, George Romney Republicans, folks like that. But both parties have pro-choice, right? Pro-business, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, the state Supreme Court, we have about 90 seconds. State Supreme Court upheld a new state law that limits the liability of criminal defendants to appeal their convictions. What does this all mean?
This is related to defendants who pled guilty. So this is, if you were found guilty at trial, you could still appeal that conviction and there's no change. But this law specifically limited the rights of a defendant who pled guilty to something and then maybe later wanted to appeal saying that he had ineffective counsel. And that was the issue in this case, that the justices found that he hadn't demonstrated that he was similarly situated to someone who had been convicted through the normal trial process. This was part of a crime omnibus bill that was passed in 2019. Actually, that it had a lot of moving parts to it. And one of them allowed one past conviction to be expunged. But a number of defense attorneys were concerned about this limit on the right to appeal.
Okay, the last 30 seconds. What do you expect to happen this week in the legislature, given what we led with at the top of this broadcast?
Yes, well, I think priority one is going to be for the Republicans to get that tax bill through. And if they can find agreement on the budget, I think they'll try to pass as many spending bills as they can and get out of there by the weekend. I still haven't heard anything about the abortion constitutional amendment. That may come back this week as well.
So you're going to be watching this 24/7 for the next, 5 or 6 days.
Yes, for sure.
And we'll be back next week at the same time slot and find out what you've discovered. Okay, so don't work too hard this week, all right?
I'll try not to.
You have been listening, as always, we hope, to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. Laura Bell and I, she the one who never sleeps, will be right back here in this time slot next week with a look at what makes news with the governor and with the Iowa State Legislature, and yes, what it means for all of us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time, and we hope you have a great week.